Blog Talk Radio.
There we go.
Watching you as you're dreaming, the dreams I thought I knew. Your smile shows the reason I watched it all come true. Your touch is cold and distant,
Good evening, everybody. Tonight is Crapshoot, a new a television show that's going to be a new radio show that's going to be about people that are no longer with us, but we're going to try to create some information that's probably not all that everybody knows about them. So that's what we're doing tonight. We have two guests that are going to be on. Deborah Lee will be doing Selena, and upon rains, AP will be doing Chris Cornell. And I wanted to do this because I always thought it's interesting that we always hear the narrative of what's going on and we don't really get the whole picture of the person's psyche or how they thought about things. So basically, this is like a research thing where you go and you find out more about the person, and then we share it on here to give some background as to why people do what they do and what they did in their lives other than just what we know of them. So that's what we're going to do tonight, and hopefully you enjoy it. Hopefully I'll have one other skit. And then after we do those two people, then we can open it up to open poetry of maybe somebody that you've written about that died too early as an artist that maybe you've done in another contest or something like that. We'll open it up to that. So I guess it's really easy. Tonight we have with us a star that died way too young, and she was a Grammy winner in Tejano music. Selena, how you doing tonight?
Well, how are you?
I'm doing great, and I'm glad you could be with us to share some more information about your life and how you affected other people within the world. Some of the questions I have for you, hopefully you'll understand why we're trying to learn more about you and sharing it with others. And we appreciate you being on. So here we go. The first question I have is, let's see here, I got to pull it up. who was the most influential person that made you want to become a singer? Oh, can you hear me?
Yes, I'm sorry. We had a family band, and my father was very influential. And by the time I was 10, I was the lead singer in the band. Started out playing just weddings and clubs in Texas, but then we featured my brother Abraham on bass guitar and my sister Suzette on the drums. So it was amazing to get to perform with them.
So it was like a family affair then, huh? So that's how you got started, is with your dad and your and your siblings, huh? That sounds cool to have a close family like that. So tell me why your father took you out of school in the eighth grade. What was the thought process on that?
Well, when we were going on tour and traveling to perform, I started to get a lot of crowds, and we were becoming very successful. And the more popular we got, the more we traveled. And my father thought that going to school would be interfering with travel time to do shows.
Okay. Can you tell me what Tijuana music is and how you were first discriminated against in the genre?
Well, it's really a hard field to break into, no matter the genre, but because there wasn't much going on that was in the spotlight for us, not too many people had heard of it. And what it was like a blend of country Western music, but not Mexican music, but not, it was like incorporated. And for a while, they even referred to me as the Mexican Madonna because of the clothes and the dance moves. But it was just to the point where you weren't taken seriously, if you could even get anybody to pay attention to begin with. So it was such a tough place to be.
Awesome. I also understand that there's it's a cross between, like, it's like a Tex-Mex kind of music, kind of like country music and that type of thing, and also a little bit of rock and a little bit of the mariachi band thrown in. It's like all of it infused into one genre, which is pretty cool. And also, I know that you are married to Chris Perez. How did you know that he was the one for you? What made you think that he was going to be the guy that you married?
Well, there was a lot of stuff going on when we met through music. And at first, you know, we did try to fight it. And one night at a Pizza Hut, he decided to tell me that he was falling for me. And we were a little bit afraid to say anything because my father didn't like him. But so we were pretty secretive until my sister tattletaled and my father put his foot down. And at that time, I realized that no matter what was going on in the world, that I couldn't stand apart of the thought of continuing to live apart from him. So in April 92... we secretly married, and we were married for nearly 3 years.
Oh, so cool. And I understand he was on the road with you for a little bit, and then your dad sent him home, right? Something like that.
Yeah, to keep my attention on the music, on performing.
Do you have a favorite song that you perform?
Well, my favorite song is More Than Words, actually by another band, but the words to the song are so meaningful and so true, and it's just one of the best songs out there as far as I'm concerned.
Awesome. I understand that you didn't grow up speaking Spanish, and you had to learn it to sing the Tejano with the Spanish influence. Can you tell me how hard that was, and did you feel like it connected you more to your audience because you were able to learn Spanish and sing it?
Well, yeah, I would have to admit that once I was more fluent, it was a bigger connection because a surprising number of my listeners don't know English. They only know Spanish. So it broadened the horizons for both of us. But it was really hard. And at first, it was like phonetics and trying to beat it into your head. And when I learned the phonetics at first, it was only like mimicking the words, not really understanding them. But as I eventually learned to understand them, it also became easier to speak it. And having started performing as a child, it was a good thing because kids are smarter than all of us, and we learn faster at that age. So, but through my father's influence, he taught me to sing in Spanish. And yes, it resonated quite a bit with the community.
So I learned that although your father withdrew you from school, you later got your high school diploma through correspondence. How does getting an education help you, and did you think about college?
It helped me to comprehend things more. It helped me to grow as a person. I think that getting an education is smart for everyone, but especially women, because sometimes they're taken less seriously than a man. I know that I would have loved to enjoy the college experience other children, other teens. But
I understand you got accepted to LSU, but you didn't go. Is that true?
Must be. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true.
Sorry about that.
That's
yeah,
okay.
That's awesome. You have a great fashion sense. How did that passion drive you into opening stores to sell your designs of clothing, which was integral to your whole appeal to many girls at that time?
Well, I saw people like Donna Summers, Madonna, Paula Abdul, even Michael Jackson and Janet Jackson that had these dance moves and they dressed to catch people's attention. And I wanted to find a way to bring that finesse, that flair in and combine those influences with African-American influences and the Latino culture and try to make it more of a universal thing than I wanted to dress to suit me and see how people took it. And when I started noticing that people were dressing like me, it felt important to help little girls see that they could come up with a style and run with it and make something of it.
Awesome, awesome. And what do you think your biggest accomplishment is as an artist?
I guess I could list off a bunch of things, and I'll mention them, but I think the biggest part was shining a light on the discrimination faced in the community that it takes. That you face, what you face just to break into the music industry. And, during the time, I had 7 songs that hit number one and 14 more that were in the top 10. And Dreamin' of You was number 22 in the top 100. So I had that. I was the first Latina artist and the 9th person overall to be inducted into the Star Trail of Fame outside of Houston's livestock show and radio in March 2020. That's when that happened. And posthumously honored with a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, which also leaves a lasting impression that helps continue to shine that light. So there's that, and hopefully the influence that I left in people's memory for the love of family. When you join a band, you stick it out the best you can. When you want something, you fight for it. I guess that kind of stuff.
Wow. Well, I'm just a big fan additionally, because it's kind of like has its own, your music has its own flavor, if you know what I mean. You have something that many people don't have. You have your own kind of flair, your kind of own style, the way that you incorporate the song and the passion that you give to it. Is there anything else you'd like to share with the audience before we go?
Well, I think I would probably take just a moment on a really serious note to say that sometimes you can't find peace no matter where you are if you can't find forgiveness. And I guess what I would want everyone to know is that I forgive Yolanda.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's deep. And I'm sure that your music will go on forever. You'll always be immortalized by that. And also just you're still winning awards, so long after you've passed. And we just wanted to say thank you for being with us tonight. And thank you for Deborah Lee for pertaining, one of our favorite artists of all time, Selena. Thank you very much.
That was awesome, but I have to be honest and tell you my palms were sweating. You would have thought I was really, I don't know. As Deborah Lee, though, I wanted to add a note that the song Dreaming of You was released live, and she was working on it as her first English language album, and she had hoped that it would put her on top of the U.S. pop charts, and unfortunately she didn't live to see the success. But Dreaming of You was released after she died, and it became a huge hit, and the album hit number one on the Billboard Top 100 the week of August 5th, 1995, and that made it the first predominantly Spanish language album to top the chart. So she left that as well.
Yeah, she was definitely in her cloud and saw it.
Sorry.
Yeah. I'm glad that we were able to do Selena. I probably should have thought of her when I thought of my show, just because of a tragic death and how it ended, and I'm glad that you brought her to light, because she is very, like, one of the first artists to ever get to both Spanish and English album, and have it
and
hit successful on both genres.
She didn't make it her 24th birthday. I mean, you could go around and round on this as to you think somebody loves you and you don't know who to trust, and for it to turn out to be her manager that had been stealing from her and lying and you know what I mean? So every aspect, every step she took forward, the people she trusted most pushed her backwards. So it was just tragic all the way around. And my big brother is here.
Is that Hatter?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Hatter. How you doing, buddy?
I'm running late.
Hatter.
Yeah, how you doing? Hey, guys.
Good. We're having fun even though nobody's calling. But that's good, because
that's
we'll get calls later, because we're going through the talk show part of it. And the first part of it went really well. We had some good questions and answers, and hopefully we brought Selena to more people and more details to what her life was about. So that was the key thing about bringing Selena on and doing it. So we've got a treat for you, Deb. We're going to do a little skit.
Oh, yeah? I was wondering if we could hear Dreaming of You before we go to the next segment.
Oh, yeah, let's do that. I don't know where it's at.
Okay.
You want to play it?
Surely. This is the song released after her death, Selena, Dreaming of You.
All right, I know that special someone you've been dreaming about all night long is right next to you right now. The new one from Selena, it's called Dreaming of You.
Late at night when all the world is sleeping, I stay up and think of you. And I wish on a star that somewhere you are thinking of me too. 'Cause I'm dreaming of you tonight till tomorrow.
Carrie with the new one from Selena called Dreaming of You.
So talented.
Oh, yeah,
that was such
a beautiful
song. So calming. It's like I don't know, it's a different sound. Just very calming person.
And how did she pass away?
She was killed by her manager.
Not her manager.
Yeah.
The leader of her fan club.
Manager of her fan club.
Right.
Yeah, fan club. And she was
embezzling
money.
That's how that Christine Greene.
Stealing from her.
That's
she shot her.
Yeah. Oh my God. So here we go. We're
And how old was she?
Well,
how old was she?
She was 25 or 24.
Week of her 24th birthday.
24.
Like a day or so before her 24th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And she would have been huge. I mean, she would have been, you know, even though she was big at the time, she would have been, think about it, you know, she was 24. She'd only be, what, 40-something today. So she would have been howling all that time.
Yeah, she was born in 1971.
Yeah, she would have been 40, or 50. She would have been 50. Oh,
remember that? Remember that Christine Grimmie, or Gimme? What her name was?
No,
She came in third on a American Got Talent.
Really?
She was shot signing autographs in Florida, right near where that nightclub massacre was, about the same day, around the same time. Yeah, she was out signing autographs after performance, and a fan shot her.
Oh wow! Oh yeah,
I
remember that now. I remember that.
Yeah.
She was on Americans Got Talent or something like that, right?
Well, I believe that's one of the ones she was. It could have been X Factor or something.
Yeah.
Actually, it was.
Oh, The Voice.
It was X Factor. It was X Factor. Yeah.
Okay.
It was X Factor.
All right. So me and Hatter's going to try to put a smile on your face. We're going to do a little skit here. You ready for this, Hatter?
I'd be scared.
No.
Okay.
It's kind of like, I'm going to put it in there. You be the pharmacist. Let's see.
Your
voices.
Oh, boy. I'm the pharmacist.
There you
okay,
so I'm going to start it.
Is it Dead Parrot?
This is called Dead Parrot. I just put it in there.
Okay.
Hi. I would like to get a refund on these pills. They're not working for me.
We don't do refunds for pharmaceuticals. You need to talk to your doctor and have him prescribe something different.
I paid 50 quid for these pills. Or as he stated, turn back the clock miracle drug.
There is no such thing. There are for erectile dysfunction.
You don't have to announce it to the whole world that my parrot is not talking anymore, that my parrot is no more.
Oh, I'm sorry. You are totally correct. But I'm confused why you'd call it a parrot. Many other names I've heard, but that is the strangest.
Well, I know it will sound weird, but he was just like a parrot for a pirate. He would come around, and when excited, he'd come out and nest and keep me company.
No, that's not weird at all. But it's the only reason why you're taking the drug. Is that the only reason you're taking the drug?
What else would I be taking the drug for?
Well, you know, to satisfy your wife, girlfriend.
Oh, no. Have you seen my wife? She's probably the reason in the first place. I had...
Oh, my gosh.
Anyway,
you.
You know, I think we if me and Adder can work on this a little bit better, this will be something that will be fun, I think. And, you know, it's basically, it's kind of like the other thing is what we'd do is a couple of things I thought is like, I actually put a proposal into the History Channel a couple of years ago on this, doing like a talk show like this for historical purposes. In other words, have somebody on, like a guest, you know, the guest would be like, you know, Napoleon or whoever, you know, and actually have the research done to figure out some of the things in their life and be able to talk to them to get other kids to understand what these back in the times were going through, right? Kind of like it's kind of like funny, but not funny kind of thing, kind of situation. I've always kind of like thought
sure.
It would be a great idea for a show. And it's a way to get to know people, and that's why I thought it would be cool to get some of these artists that passed way too soon to maybe get them on. So I don't know where AP is, but I think he's going to come on a little bit later.
He had a lunch thing with his family, but he will be here during the second hour.
Okay. Okay, cool. Awesome. So I guess we can just open it up to, you know, whoever wants to listen to whatever kind of poems,
well,
you know, if you have any kind of poems.
I wrote one for the show here anyway.
You got one?
Cool.
Yeah, I did write one.
All right, cool.
That group of people.
Where's it at? You going to put it in there?
People. Yeah, I get it. You know me, speedy.
Team of voices. That's all yeah. Right. I hate my cats.
Oh, okay. Something else is in my queue. Deb, it's the last
one.
The
cat
keeps
trying to get up on my chair. Okay.
What?
Yeah. It's the last one I posted on my page. Can you grab it? I had something else in my queue.
I'm on it.
Okay, thank you.
And that is called When You Were 27?
Yep.
On My Way? Cooper,
yes, we need sound effects.
Okay, here it is.
We need sound effects of dice rolling.
Oh, do we have it on this thing?
Not
we
yet.
Don't.
Rolling dice.
You can probably find it.
While you read.
Okay.
This is a sound effect for rolling dice. I don't know.
It's called When You Were 27. The blues you grew from deep gospel roots, followed by cages with white go-go boots, comfortably southern on the northbound train, burning axes on tracks, throwing stones into the rain. Taking trips on crystal ships, counting dunes that feed the sea, feeling it's something we couldn't see. Taking too much on a Hollywood high, sleep in peace. I now bid goodbye. Who am I talking about?
So is that, would it be Jim Morrison?
No.
Or
that
be
is,
Elvis
that
Presley?
That is the reference to crystal ships, though, is Morrison. So if you think about it.
Yeah, and then the deep gospel roots, I would think, would be Elvis. With the white go-go boots.
Okay.
I'll shake it all up, baby.
Okay.
Give me a something. Thank you very much.
Like Jim Morrison?
You know, his favorite music. I feel like I said that first, but... taking too much on a Hollywood high, sleeping in peace. Actually,
the blues you grew from deep gospel roots, followed by cages with white go-go boots, is Janis Joplin.
Oh.
Okay, so you put them all in here. That's
Something
really cool. Because like I'm picking up all kinds of different
burning
people.
Axes
on
the tracks. No, it's in
yeah, like
some tips on the crystal ships.
Crystal ships
is a feed
story.
To see something we all couldn't see. Taking too much on Hollywood. What's taking too much on a Hollywood high, sleeping in peace, I now bid goodbye.
She overdosed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a shame. They're all the 27.
And it was right. And it was just a couple months, several weeks after Jimi Hendrix died. Oh, that's the verse I forgot to put in. Gosh darn it. Okay.
But still, look how many you have in there with, what's this, 3, 6, 9?
Well, the one throwing stones into the wind, that's sort of a combo between Jimi Hendrix and Brian Jones. Burning axes on tracks and throwing stones. Ruin.
Yeah, you know,
year,
they still, a A lot of people believe that the record company killed Brian Jones.
Really?
Because
why would that be?
Because there's a bad breakup with the Stones. They didn't want him anymore on their albums.
I didn't know he broke up before he died. I thought he was still a member. Wow.
No, he was out. He had been doing drugs so much that they couldn't rely on him anymore. So they fired him. And within like a week or two after he got broke up with he died.
Just like Sid Barrett.
He was
Barrett,
one actually.
So just like Sid Barrett. Sid Barrett with Pink Floyd.
Yeah. It's too sad. It's always sad when people die too soon. And I think
Brian
a lot of times, the drugs.
Wasn't Brian considered the head of the group?
He was originally the founder, but what happened is Mick and Keith took over because they started writing the lyrics in their own songs.
Sure.
So when they started becoming more involved and actually writing the songs, he kind of died out. But the guy was very talented. He could play almost any instrument, Brian Jones could.
Sure.
He was very talented and knew how to play different things.
Yeah, that was the same thing with Sid Barrett. He formed Pink Floyd, but through the drug use, he couldn't handle being the front man or the representing the band. Got into drugs and ruined his brain, so they had to kick him out of his own band. They still write about it. They're just bad having to do it, but you know.
Yeah,
sometimes
you just can't believe how a lot of bands break up because they think that they're not going the way that they should go, and they have everybody pulling on them different ways, and they break up. I mean, you think of Beatles, probably the most influential band of the '60s. They only lasted 6 years or 7 years.
63 to 77 years,
somewhere around there. I think their last album, they didn't even talk to each other.
Think the last album was an assembly of some of it was Let It Be, wasn't it? It was just a redone of some rehashing some of the old songs and I don't think they were in the studio together for the last 2 years.
Was that Apple Records? Was their last album?
Oh yeah. I thought it was Let It Be, and then a gold album. Could be wrong.
Could be. Beatles. I hate to say this, but Beatles were not like. I'm not like a big Beatles fan. I'm just.
Yeah. Really.
I mean, I know all their songs, I'm more of a Rolling Stones and. That group, that genre, than the Beatles, but yeah, the Beatles were always number one just for the sound quality. That's why everybody loved them when they put on a show. They had so much technical advanced equipment that's why people loved them.
Well, Barry Gordy. Was a genius because he figured out that what everybody was listening. Everybody was listening through AM radios, so he would record with that in mind, so it played best over the AM station, the radio, and what was picked up by. It was picked up by cheap little transistor radios, but that was the 90% of what was listening being listened to. So he used the didn't have any bottom to it. It was all top end. Recording tracks. So Beatles was probably that.
So we have.
I don't hear too much. Go ahead.
Well, I think it's talking music is like some of the artists that's on there died at 27. Even Elvis, you think about it, he was pretty young when he died. What was he, like 40 something? He was. I want to say he just turned 40, 41, somewhere around there.
I remember it was August 21st. I remember where I was when I heard. I remember exactly where I was.
Yeah. I knew where I was. I was in my dad's marina in Ohio. It was that summer right before school. I couldn't believe it.
Wow. Yeah.
Because, you know, when we was kids in the 60s, my mom, that was one of her favorite singers.
You know, he's not really dead. The King, they still see him. He's around.
Well, I had thought about writing this book, and basically that the record industry was so in desperate need of a new type of music that they invented Elvis Presley, and that several different people played him during the journey, like there was no Shakespeare.
It wasn't really Elvis.
Exactly. Yeah. There was like several people that played him, you know. And you had the young Elvis that did the before the military.
Yeah.
Then you had the military Elvis, and then you had the 60s Elvis. Uh-oh, here we go. I think we have somebody here. Yes.
Hello, Greg.
Welcome to the show. Hey.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody. I'm great. I'm glad that you took the challenge to be Chris Connell tonight. We're going to ask you a few questions on Crapshoot.
Yes.
Crapshoot.
Yes.
And when I saw you pick him, I was very happy because Chris Cornell is probably one of the most prolific songwriters there's ever been. And he's written so many different songs and for so many different people, not only himself, but for other people. And such a great writer of lyrics. It's unbelievable. So with that being said, we are going to have Upon Rains. AP is going to play Chris Cornell in our interview. And did you get my questions that I sent?
I did, Chris. Yes, I did. Thank you.
Okay, so you think you'll be able to answer some of those, or?
I hope so. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Cool. All right. So let me pull this up, and we'll get going. All right. So welcome, Chris Cornell, 3-time Grammy Award winner. First of all, I just want to say how amazing your career has been. You founded Soundgarden Seattle in 1984, and you've been so prolific in writing songs. When you was younger, we'll start like when you was younger, and then we'll move up to whatever. When you was younger, why did you decide to change your name to your mother's maiden name? And when your mother and father were divorced?
Well, just as an aside here, I should say that I did exactly the same thing. So there's a sense of me and Chris making exactly the same decision. And, I think it was just the connection that he had with his mother. I mean, he was one of six. I was one of six children, and two older brothers, three younger sisters, and I'd already performed at school, you know, some anti-war songs and some other bits and pieces, and she'd always been, you know, incredibly supportive of my music and. I was really influenced by the music that she listened to, and she was the person that really, you know, guided my years, and so it made sense for me to change my name.
Awesome. You once stated that your mother saved your life by buying a snare drum. Can you tell me what you meant by that?
Well, the snare drum was where I started Gress. You know, I mean, you know, I didn't go straight to be a musician. You know, I was a dishwasher. I was, you know, working as a fishmonger. I was even a chef, you know. And so, you know, I think, you know, what it meant was that it enabled me to get my way into the first band that I was in, and that was a cover band in the 80s called The Shemps, and it was The Shemps,
awesome,
that sort of led on to everything else, yeah.
On a side note, I don't know if it's true or not, but is The Shemps taken from one of the Three Stooges, you think?
Oh, I
don't know. I don't know if you can find
out. I think it probably was. You know, I mean, you know, I mean, it's a really unusual, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Shemps name, but you know, but anyway, there you go.
Yeah. You once dated your. Can you tell me why your mom pulled you out of Catholic school in the seventh grade?
Now, I actually struggled about that a little bit, but I actually didn't find that. The only thing that I do know is that I struggled with depression, you know, from very young age, you know, from the age of 12, you know, I had issues with depression and substance abuse, and was basically, you know, it wasn't until 15 that I found that snare drum, found music, and then sort of started to find my way. But you know, I suspect,
awesome,
it was just because, you know, of the mess I was in.
Seattle's always been known as a prolific area for music. You got Jimi Hendrix coming out of there, and then the birth of grunge,
yeah,
music. How important was it to the area for you to sign the record deal with Sub Pop Recording? That kind of like,
yeah,
got,
well, look,
grunge music on,
yeah,
the on the national scene.
Yeah, look, it's Sub Pop was just it still is an amazing home of new artists, and particularly in that, you know, Seattle area. I mean, you go even today, and I think, you know, Sub Pop's got, you know, 50 artists on the books from that part of the world. And if you go and you have a look at the sort of back catalogue of Sub Pop, 500 bands that it's given, you know,
wow,
life to in that period. And some of the names, I mean, it's not just Soundgarden, you know, it's people like Smashing Pumpkins. These are sort of, you know, bands that have made an impact not just in Seattle or America, but Urge Overkill, but, you know, around the world, you know,
yeah,
you know, this was a label that took risks with people. It was a label that refused to be defined, and it just did. It's an amazing job with local people, still does.
Your group Soundgarden was the first group from the grunge scene that signed with a major label. How proud of you was of that accomplishment?
Well, you know, Soundgarden, you know, came out of the Shrimps and the bassist Hiro Yamamoto, and you know, it really produced some classic grunge songs, but then went on to, you know, produce songs that, you know, became broader in their appeal, you know, and songs that are very well known, you know, like Spoon Man and Black Hole Sun from 94, but songs that are just brilliantly written that maybe, you know, don't get as much airplay, but Fell on Black Days, for example, which is one of my favourite songs. It just, you know, talks about depression, talks about it in a really powerful and meaningful way.
Yeah, I totally understand, you know, what is it, Super Unknown is the first, like, big album that went out, but you had a couple of ones before that that really are not as well known, but actually have some good songs on them.
Some really good songs and some great concert songs. Yeah.
Exactly. By writing songs, how does this help in with your depression? When you, I once heard that you never are depressed when you're writing songs, and so I always thought that I think that's the key to a lot of people that write poetry. It's a similar thing, like when you write out your feelings in your songs. Is that something that helps with your depression?
Well, I think that there's a few things about songwriting that help with depression. I mean, the first, there's a positive outcome at the end of it. The second is you're in a routine. You know, the songwriting for me has always been a routine. And the third is that, you know, almost always, you know, when you're writing songs, you're writing them for a purpose, and you're writing them from an album, or you're writing them for a period of time. And so what it tends to do is it tends to structure up your thoughts, and because you know you've got so much time to work with. And so, you know, they say with depression, you know, you've got to have a good routine, you've got to look after yourself, you've got to have something empowering about what you're doing, and songwriting fulfills all of those.
I am just amazed by your 4-octave voice. I mean, how you can go from falsetto to, you know, the different range that you do. When did you realize that you had such a gift for that type of singing?
Oh, look, it happened pretty late, really, because if you think about it, you know, I started off with these other side projects, and then had the album, you know, where we finally got together, and you know, I've got the guitar and started singing, and so it wasn't until fairly late in the piece that I sort of realised that, you know, the voice was just as much an instrument as the guitar was, and you didn't start hearing that until probably, you know, the third or fourth album of Soundgarden, where we really started writing some things to take advantage of that.
Well, I just got amazed. It's just the amazing range that you have with your voice is just like unbelievable. I think along with, you know, Freddie Mercury, you're like up at the top of that list. I really do think so. As far as rock singers, probably two best are you and Freddie.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
of course.
But even going back, you know, the 4-octave ranges are very unusual. And so, you know, even people like, you know, J.S. Bach had a 4-octave range. Yeah, the famous musicians in the 16th, 17th century had 4-octave ranges, and quite a remarkable range, really.
Yes. Okay, now I'm going to get it serious, a little bit serious. How did the death of Andrew Wood affect you? And for everybody's information, Andrew was another singer in the Seattle area that died from a heroin overdose.
Yeah, so he was really just incredibly well known in Seattle. Yeah, so bands like Malfunction, Mother Love Bone. He had a really loyal local following, and you know, he and I was a roommate of him, and so, you know, it basically, you know, we created a band called Temple of the Dog, which was, you know, made up of a number of different musicians from the Seattle area, and we just went to work, and in 15 days, you know, with the help of a young guy that we found as a singer called Eddie Vedder, we went and recorded an album, you know. You know, it out of that came a new band called Pearl Jam, you know. So we probably did some good things.
All right. Why did you break up with Soundgarden the first time? Is there reasons for the breakup?
Look, again, you know, everything I've read and heard about this is more to do with Chris than it is to do with the other Soundgarden members. You know, all through the period, you know, he'd been dealing with drug abuse, the substance abuse, and when you have that going on, it's really hard to find your way with a group of other people, much less yourself.
You had your own band under your own name, and then you became sober, and but you wanted to get back with Soundgarden, even though you were successful without them. Is there a reason for that, or does it just happen?
It just the music is brilliant, Chris. You know, as a group, just the power that small number of individuals could put out on a stage, and not just on a record, but more importantly, live to the fans, was just unbelievable. You know, the combination just works. Sometimes you find a group of people and they just click, and you miss it when you're not with them.
I know what you mean. I think when they came back together in 2010, it was the first album they put out in 16 years. I went out. First thing I did is go out and buy it because it was like amazing. It was an amazing comeback album. And to me, it's like they had their own unique. I mean, a lot of those bands in the 90s sounded almost the same, but they still had their own unique flavor. I really enjoyed their whole group. And I think a lot of it had to do with just, like you said, the amount of power they could wrap up in their music selection was unbelievable.
Yes.
There was like nobody else. They just blow people off the stage. It was so much dealing with that. And my last question for the night, and I appreciate you coming on, Chris, and letting us know some more about you as opposed to what the narrative is, what happened at your end. But you've dealt with depression most of your teen and adult life. Is there any insight you can give others about what you've done to combat it?
Well, I was been asked about that a number of times, and my answer's always been, you know, that I've been depressed for a long time, and if you're depressed for long enough, it's almost like a comfort. It's almost like a state of mind that you've made peace with because you've been in it for so long, and it's a very selfish sort of approach, but it's like a comfort, and I think, you know, the advice that I'd have for people would be to never fall for that comfort, to never you know, succumb to that, you know, that peace of being in a depressed state, because it will only ever lead to bad things.
Yep, I agree. I've been there. I've been depressed most of my adult life as well. And I didn't even know it. I mean, it was just affecting me without me really knowing or what to call it until I got, it's okay for you to ask for help. That's the other point I want to make. Don't feel like you have to handle something on your own.
I think that's
awesome. Yeah. And lastly, we're going to play a song of yours, and I really appreciate you being on the show tonight as Chris Cornell, AP. I hope we can do this again, because I think it's a good format so that people can understand other people and get a little bit more out of it, and hopefully everybody enjoys it. But we're going to play a song real quick, and we appreciate you being on.
I got a question for Chris.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
When did you turn English?
Well, I've always had that sort of twang, Hatter. But you know, it obviously, you know, just must be the microphone.
Oh, okay.
to the mic. There you go. So, Gress, I think that once people listen to the interview with AP and myself and get the hang of what you're talking about, that they'll realize that, you know, it's not as scary as it seemed, and I hope you continue.
And the thing is, I give you enough. I do my own research, too, and I try to help you out.
Yes.
Of what questions I'm
going to
ask.
Yeah, that was perfect.
So that will help.
You know, and then you
and
just
that
a few
makes
things
it easier
go in
for
there.
The show.
And I thought that was great. And
yeah.
I mean, it's a fun way to educate people so that we can play a song. So I think it was a brilliant idea. And speaking of that song, Soundgarden, Sell on Black Days.
Oh, awesome song.
Black days, girl.
Wow.
Been a while since I heard that.
Yes.
Yeah.
AP, you know, I was thinking about the time that we talked about the, what's the group for Australia that I kind of, it's like a, crap, I can't remember the song now, but we talked about them, and this is when we had the show about the progressive music, but the early
yes.
90s, I think it was. And there was a group from Australia I really liked, but I can't remember the name of them now. It just slips my mind. I got to take Prevagen or something. But
yeah.
I remember the song, and you had written a poem to it, I think, and I really enjoyed it. Do you remember which one that was? And if you do,
can you
put it in there and you read it again?
I don't remember it, Chris. I mean,
I forgot the name.
I had a number of bands that sort of reflected that sort of the grunge music. I mean, we had Silverchair, for example, that came out. And
Silverchair. They had a lot of, I want to say around the 90s, you know, one of my favorite ones was the big bald headed guy from Australia. He was actually,
yes,
I saw him down at Janet's Landing. I'm getting old. I can't remember these guys' names anymore, but he, you know, the bed is burning. Remember that song about the Aboriginal
Midnight
people?
Midnight Oil. Yes.
Midnight Oil.
I remember Midnight Oil.
And oh my God,
yes.
He was such a big, tall dude, man. He had this bald head, and we were down at Janet's Landing, and he's singing, and in the middle, and he's right in the middle of the set. Somebody threw something at him, and he goes, "Who did that? Or I'm getting out of here." You know, they picked the guy that threw something. They picked him up, and they picked him up and threw him out of the line all the way to security, because we're all jammed up at the front of the stage, right? And it was the funniest, one of the funniest experiences of my life, because he was that group was pretty damn good.
They were a brilliant band. He was a very unusual singer. Interestingly enough, Peter Garrett went on in between Midnight Oil, because Midnight Oil still plays, back in 2007, so about, 15 years ago, Peter Garrett got elected to the Australian Parliament as part of the Labor Party. And so Peter Garrett was for 3 years the Australian Minister for Environment, Heritage and the Arts.
Awesome. Because he really, I mean, when you listen to the words of that song and just the passion that he sang with, you could tell he was really into that cause.
Oh, he was.
It was
amazing. About that. No. And you know, Beds Are Burning is a brilliant song. It wasn't the only one that he did, but he writes incredibly powerfully about being in the outback and you know, about the First Nations people and the suffering that they had.
Yeah, I just remember that concert was so much fun, and just like the craziness that happened, and just that guy being moved up above everybody's head to security.
Awesome. But he was a big guy. He was a big guy and a big powerful guy.
Yeah, he was pretty tall.
And he was. Yeah. He was. Yeah. And, you know, it was, you know, he was a brilliant singer and a powerful singer and a distinctive singer.
Yeah. And they've been together forever, okay. I think they've been
20, 30 years. Yeah, absolutely. About 20, 30 years. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. What you got?
What band are you talking about?
If you
Midnight Oil,
the paragraph,
like a,
if you read the paragraph on the chat wall, I'll play the song.
Oh, cool.
Okay. All right. Midnight Oil, known informally as the Oils, is an Australian rock band composed by Peter Garrett, vocals on harmonica, Rob Hurst drums, Jim Mogini guitar, keyboard, and Martin Rotzi guitar. The group was formed in Sydney in 1972. Wow, that's 50 years almost, by Hurst. Mogini, the original bassist, Andrew James's farm, they enlisted Garrett the following year, changed their name in 1976, and hired Rotzi a year later. Peter Gifford served as a bass player from 1980 to 1987, with Bones Hillman then assuming the role until his death in 2020. You want to play the song?
Here we go with Beds Are Burning, Midnight Oil.
Cool.
That's it. Wow. When the song came out, I didn't know really what it was about. So I researched it and everything like that. And I guess it was bring light on the Aboriginal people, how they were mistreated by the government and those type of things.
Correct. You're exactly right. It was basically a right song, Chris. It was basically saying give these people who were there in the country originally, give them rights and give them some land back. That was original. That's what it was about. It was a land rights song.
Yeah, and the thing is like it's just like that in every country. There's always somebody that's discriminated against, and it's sad. And it happened in every country, in the world, because there's always somebody that gets taken over or whatever. And so this song, how powerful it is, and to go from like a song in Australia, then to go worldwide, and people. I mean, this song was huge. It was a big song.
Yes.
And I remember it distinctly when he came here, and somebody goes, "Hey, want to go see them?" And I go, "Yeah, I heard that song. I love that song." And then I found out what it was about, and then it actually, it's like, here's the music, and this is bringing light to something. And I think people don't realize the power of what music can do. And this basically changed a lot of things.
I agree. It highlights things. It throws a spotlight on things, and it creates a momentum. When everybody's singing about, give some rights to these people, it creates a momentum for that to happen.
Yeah, I thought he was very passionate about it, and you can tell it in his just the way that he did the song. And yeah, so it was, thank you, Deb, for putting that on there. I appreciate that. And unfortunately, we didn't get too many calls tonight, but that's okay. I think we have a show that I think once people get to understand what we're doing, and we got to build it a little bit and have some fun with it, I think we'll get there. And some of the things that I'm thinking about is like what I originally envisioned was maybe having, the same thing with poets, like different poets, and you bring their write one of their poems and you bring it to the show, and then you interview that poet, and somebody like Keats or Edgar Allan Poe, they have a lot of information about those poets, what their lives, how bad they were. And a lot of things people don't realize is like a lot, even some of the poets that Robert Frost, he had such a terrible life with all of his children dying, his wife and all those things that went through, and how, the adversity that these poets went through and how they was still able to write is like unbelievable.
Yes.
So we bring in some of those things, and I think it would be a cool show. I just think it's something that I've had this idea for years. I mean, I just never be able to really pull it off. It's going to take a little while.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Well, I really think it's like, I don't think that this episode's going to go a long way, and like I said, in showing people what you're looking for, and I mean, it can't get much easier than you telling us the questions you're going to ask so that we can research and come up with how we want to present ourselves and stuff. I think that it was really fun, and I learned a few things that I didn't know about her when I was doing the reading. So, again,
I basically – I know enough about all those singers you have on there. I know enough about them, which is weird because I'm like one of those persons that's got to know more, And I learned a little bit more about Chris Cornell because, I knew he came out of the Seattle area and I knew he had depression a lot, but I didn't know all the details. Like, that when he was like young, like 11 years old, he was basically drinking and smoking pot. And these things, they tell you right now that the earlier you get into alcohol and drugs, it has a more of a mental effect on you. So this is something that we need to, it helps teach people to the warning signs of this and try to help people understand what happens in these people's lives and why they become who they can become or what happens to them. It's kind of interesting. I think it's twofold. It's like we learn more about them, and then maybe from their actions we can learn and help other people. And other people know that other people are going through the same things that they go through, you know?
Absolutely.
I think it's pretty cool.
And it's a gentler way to put the info out there, too. Don't you think?
Yeah, I didn't want to focus. I didn't want to focus on. I didn't want to focus on their deaths because that's not who they are, right? Their death is not who they
exactly.
are. Who they are is what they've accomplished and what they went through in their life.
Yes.
And,
yes.
you know, so I always want to focus on that. And I wanted to get to my man, Jimi Hendrix. Maybe next time I'll play him because he had a very interesting life. He really did.
Mm.
And, you know, he took a guitar and put the strings upside down, you know, and played it that way. So it's a unique sound of his music. So it's always interesting. And there's so many bands that came out of Seattle. It's like unbelievable. You know, I would love to have been there in the early, late 80s or early 90s. Cause from what I understand, it was like crazy. Like you'd go to any bar and there'd be live music and people playing like at any bar or anywhere at any time. So,
just like San Francisco and Haight-Ashbury in the 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, there's definitely some music meccas. And, you know, Tampa is considered the heavy metal, metal rock of the world, because there's a lot of bands started here, the metal bands started here.
The Headbangers or the heavy metal?
Yeah, heavy metal. A lot of them started here. And that's, you know, just in our own complex, I have one of the guys that are in, I can't even think about what their name of the group. I'm telling you, I'm losing my mind. I can't remember like I used to. But, yeah. So, Poetic Paso enjoyed the show. So, that's nice. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have probably I'm probably just going to cut off at 10:30 just because, you know, I think we've accomplished everything I wanted to accomplish. And next time what we're going to do is we're going to have like a contest for like silly commercials, you know, to lighten up things.
Awesome.
So we'll have like a contest to like write like, you know, the Bassomatic 5000, you know, like from Saturday Night Live, something like that, where it grinds, it pulsates, it does everything. Just put your bass right inside of it, and it will become a stew. You will love the Bassmaster 5000, stuff like that. You know, I like to have fun with that, like a little skit like that. Me and Hatter had fun with our dead parrot tonight. That was fun, and we'll have something similar to that going forward. You know. And, you know, just something silly, you know, to keep it light and the commercials light. Yeah. I do love that kind of stuff. And, you know, one of the things that the show will have is hopefully we'll get more people involved. And then maybe we can, you know, give people a clue as to what to add. Maybe they can come on and join in and maybe ask their own questions, as long as we have it, you know, scripted out as to what they're going to ask people, so that people know what to expect. Because one of the things is always like, what are you going to ask? How's it going to be going? But if you give the answers, then most people will be able to be comfortable with answering. So that'll be awesome. All right.
Well,
so I thank everybody that came on the show. Go ahead.
If you want to try to make a plan, Brett, your next date would be February 28th, because the last
– yeah.
No, I'm sorry. It's February 22nd, because the last –
22nd? Okay.
Tuesday, Yeah, February 22nd, because the last Tuesday of January is the 25th, and it's the 26th in Oz, and AP will be doing Melbourne Day. So, yeah, February 22nd.
Oh, that's
22nd.
The race, right? Isn't that the race?
Yeah. No. Maybe I did it. Is that the wrong? Australia Day.
Australia Day.
Right. Australia Day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The
right.
It's like their
Australia
first
Day.
So, yeah. So he'll have January.
Right.
So
awesome.
February 22nd. And if you put the board up early so I can torture people, I'll be happy to do that.
Yeah, I think we'll do some I think we'll do English poets next time. And
good thinking.
Well, how do you think? You think that'd be cool?
Yeah, I think it'd be cool.
Some English and English or Scottish, either one. You know, anything. We could do that. I mean, we'll have so much because the interview takes about, from what I gathered tonight, because I want to see how long it took me to time the questions I had took about 10 minutes to answer, 10 to 12 minutes.
Yeah.
So we got to kind of like figure out time and commercials and stuff like that. So we want to keep it interesting, right? So maybe we have like one or two poems that go with that writer that people are inspired by. After the person does the interview, then we have a couple of the rights for the authors to come in and do it. It's kind of like a timing thing to make sure everybody can be there on the same time, you know, and because it's kind of like, I want it to be kind of like a talk show kind of thing where it's timed out and then people are doing certain things at a certain time. And that way we can reflect on it. But, you know, there's always some hitches in that. I understand because people can't get on or something like that. But
I'll be the house writer.
Cool. And then
I'll be the house writer. Yeah.
All right. Sounds like a fun job. Anyway, I want to thank you so much, everyone. And February 22nd it will be. And I appreciate this. I hope that you guys had fun because I know I did. I always envision this. You know, I've always been a. Why don't we do another Selena song, and after that we'll talk a little bit more. So go ahead, Deb, put the Selena song on.
Awesome, and here it is. This is "I Could Fall in Love" by Selena.
Oh, another beautiful song by Selena, of course, that came out after she passed away, after she was murdered. And then several people covered her, Gloria Estefan and J-Lo. And basically, you know, J-Lo became really popular after she portrayed Selena. You know, people don't realize that, but she, her big success came when she played Selena. And then she got a lot really popular after that movie. She really did. And so she started her own career singing and stuff like that. So excellent show tonight. And just don't forget, we have Sweet Pea Show on Thursday at 10 p.m. And be ready for that. And Deb, do you know what the theme is for her show is on Thursday?
Open poetry.
People love open poetry, right? They like to just come in and read whatever they want to read. And I always tell people on open poetry, if you have a poem that only has like maybe one or two people write it, but it's like one of your best, that's the time to bring it out of the mothballs, because that's what happened to me. I have one of my poems that I only got one comment on, you know. And, you know, when you write something and you feel like, because most of the time I don't think anything I write is very good, but, you know, it kind of hurts when you have one that, you know, is like one of your best ones and you only get one comment on it and your people are like, and it's like somebody that you know. So, I mean, not that you don't love people that know you to, you know, to comment on your stuff, but it's like, dang, I didn't get anybody to see it. So that's always a good thing to, when you have an open poetry show, is bring one of those ones that you're very, very content with, right? Very one that you say, damn, this is one of my best writing. I'm going to bring it to the show, because then you get more people. And hopefully when we're on the show, when we do shows, that people will comment on the poetry, because that's one of the biggest things is to have people read it and comment on your poetry. That's one of the reasons why all poetry is here, right, is to get other people to read what you have and to comment on it. And it helps you because you want other people to understand what you're going through or what action. You want to have people laugh at some of the stuff that you write, all those type of things. That's the whole beauty about doing all poetry, and also with having people on open poetry, because you get to highlight one of your favorite pieces. So I always like enjoy that when they do have the open poetry. So make sure you bring your one of your better poems to Sweet Pea Show on Thursday at 10 o'clock, and we'll have our next show hopefully on February 22nd. You know, I mean, I'm going either by English poets or women poets, and maybe like a couple of men poets too. So we'll see what we have, and maybe it'll be the tragic poets, I always call them. Maybe we'll have the tragic poems and poets, and maybe we'll just do that show. So we'll see how it goes. I thank you all for being on the show and for taking the time to research the people that you gave, and hopefully we'll get this again in February. What do you think?
Sounds good.
Looking forward.
And then Hatter's going to be more involved next time, because he's going to be my second banana. So he'll do the introductions. He'll come on and be like the Ed McMahon or the
yeah.
So I'll be able to is that right? You know, kind of thing. And then I might do a little bit of a monologue. Who knows? We'll try to keep it light, and then I'll have some fun with it too, to do the commercials side. It was so cold outside.
How cold was it?
I saw a person. I seen a snowman. I saw a snowman making a person. Anyways, thank you so much. And like I always say, tell people that you love them every day, because it is helpful for everybody to understand who loves them. And then also try to do something kind for somebody every day. It doesn't have to be a big task. Opening the door, anything like that, pumping gas for the elderly, anything that can help somebody out, just do a nice deed for somebody else. It doesn't have to be that big, but it makes the world a better place to live in. And I want to say just to everybody, thank you for the Christmas wishes, and have a happy new year and a safe happy new year. Make sure that if you've imbibed too much, that you stay where you are. And if you do need to get home, to take a taxi or take some other means of transportation, it's very important. I love you all. And that's the show. Do you have any more comments anybody wants to add real quick?
Love and respect.
All good, Greg.
Yep. All good, man.
All right.
Here's Gressman.
All right. Thank you.
And I just
yeah, I like that.
The night with three guys all by myself.
There you go. Awesome. All right. Hopefully people will listen to this and get an idea of what I'm looking for next time. Thank you all very much. Love you all. Have a good and happy new year, and prosperity and blessing in the next year. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
Night, Tom.